Three, two, Locked Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your voice of reason, an independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday, June 21st, 2007. It is now about 6:31 a.m. Central Time in the good old United States. Liberty Talk Radio is your antidote to popular talk radio. Here you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, or Stalingrad. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. And now, on to our program. Well, good morning, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call area code 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620, and we'll take your comments while on the air. At other times, you may call area code 903-551-2186. So when we're off the air and you're listening to a rebroadcast and you would like to call in, call to 903-551-2186 to leave a voice message. Of course, you may send us email at any time to comments@libertytalkradio.com. We'll try to respond to your questions during our next broadcast. In addition to accessing Liberty Talk Radio from our website, you may now access our broadcast from blogtalkradio.com/Liberty Talk Radio. I encourage you also to get educated on economic issues. Go to my friend Andy Sutton's website to numeric2cents.com. That's my2centsonline.com, and that 2 is a numeric 2. All right, and good morning. If I sound a little raspy, folks, that's because I just returned from vacation, something I very, very rarely do. Not that I can't afford it, I just am not a vacation person. I have too many things to do, too many things that I enjoy doing to leave to go sightseeing and go to a place that I don't particularly care to be or would like to be but have nothing to do there. So that ends my dissertation on vacations. But I went with my wife. We had a very, very nice, relaxing time. Unfortunately, I returned from vacation at 3:30 this morning. That's right, that's 3 hours ago. And I got maybe an hour or two worth of sleep. The alarm went off and I was just blown right out of bed. So here I am. I hope I am functional this morning to do at least a 30-minute broadcast. I did promise that we would talk a little bit about global warming, a subject which is as divisive as any other issue facing us in America today, not only in America, but worldwide. And I have an opinion, and I'd like to share that with you. And please call in to 646-652-4620. Now, before we start, we have some email. We have email Bill from New York City, my old hometown. He says, your program on 9/11 on the 9/11 group disappoints me. I don't think these guys have a leg to stand on. Why haven't the mainstream media picked this up? No one with any public fame or name has said anything. Bill, thank you very much for listening to Liberty Talk Radio, and I especially appreciate your email. That comment is a very, very common comment. Bill, I don't know the answer to that question, that comment. I cannot qualify it, but you're right. You're absolutely correct. There have been very, very few people who have taken the 9/11 complicit government complicity banner and ran with it. The only reason that I have not shut down in my own mind the possibility that someone knew something about the about the attacks on 9/11 is because there is too much evidence, and this is hard evidence, to support the proposition that there were enough signs that something was going to happen. The United States government was warned about this. And I just find the whole... In fact, you know, Bill, I can take the exact opposite approach by saying I feel that it is as impossible for the government to not have been complicit. I mean, just think of this. The United States has... Oh, I forgot the number of aircraft protecting the United States. This is like fighter and bomber aircraft. It's in the thousands. I knew the number. I want to say 5,400 or 4,000 aircraft in the United States or around the world. And, you know, we have a violation of our airspace on the morning of September 11th. And yet it takes an hour and 35 minutes for the first aircraft to arrive. I'm sorry. You could explain that to your blue in the face. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. And the only reason why I persist in at least keeping the questions about 9/11 open, and I don't close the door on this issue, is because if in fact the U.S. government was absolutely innocent, I mean it was just a matter of incompetence, where they knew absolutely nothing about it, or they knew it, but I didn't think it was important enough, and there was a miscommunication, that would be the first time that occurred in American history. You see, we went to war directly after 9/11, and we were prepared for war prior to 9/11. And, you know, you don't take an entire army, move tanks to the Middle East or halfway around the world. That's a lot of preparation. We were ready for that. So it just, you know, if it smells like a skunk and it looks like a skunk and it walks, it's a skunk. And this one really reeks. We did this in World War II. We did it in World War I. We've done this since the 1800s of setting up false flags, setting up the populace to prime them to get their permission to do some really to be involved in an armed conflict. Again, if they were not complicit, it would be the first time. And I think there are just too many contradictory remarks by the government and too much silence. I fear that when in fact we get the true picture, and whenever that comes out from wherever it comes out, of what actually happened during that period of time, America will be shocked. But it's not going to happen soon. We just learned, here we are in World War II ended in 1945, right? And it's in 2002 we get the first publication written regarding the complicity of the government regarding the supposedly surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. And this is documented stuff. This is from the Freedom of Information Act. This is not somebody's supposition. And here we are, 57 years later, and finally someone puts all the material together. I hope, Bill, we don't have to wait 57 years. I hope we've waited long enough. You know, but I share your concerns. You're right. And listen to this. Those people who have been public figures, who have said things, have sort of been ostracized. Now, I'm not a Rosie O'Donnell fan, as you know. I mean, she's on the other side of the political spectrum that I am in, you know. But yet she has said something. She's ostracized. She and he's another, I guess, another quacko in a way. But all everyone in Hollywood's quacko anyway, you know. He's one now that's carrying that banner, and he's receiving all sorts of negative publicity. So I'm sure if we were back in 1946 and someone said, you know, I think the government may have known something about that, boy, that person would have been branded as a communist and at least ostracized, if not under surveillance by the FBI, CIA, NSA, and Secret Service. You name the organization, we have it today. Thank you, Bill. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your email. You're absolutely correct. I'm waiting for the real answer. I really am. Here's one from Robert, and this is a compliment. He said, I just got around to listening to your broadcast. Sorry to have taken so long to get to it, but I want to say thank you for all the work and effort you did put into answering it. This is the issue on the abandonment of a child by this woman and what the libertarian principle was. It's what I discussed last Thursday. Now, Sunday we didn't have a broadcast because I was on vacation. That is a very difficult issue, and you did an excellent job. I look forward to your show and thoughts on global warming. Thank you very much, Robert, and thank you for listening in. We have one here from, well, this is from Robert, and Robert asks another question. This was one before that one. He says, is there a predominant libertarian position on whether private money creation should be allowed and or encouraged? Another way to pose the question may be whether the role of government to mint and issue coin was an exclusive right of the federal government, or whether the states, corporations, banks, and individuals could also issue money. Excellent question. I think the way the Constitution is designed, we were only permitted to coin money, not to print money, I think, according to the Constitution. And the U.S. Mint has that right, has that the authority to do so. There is no mention of paper money. I don't know if that was deliberate, because other governments have printed money before and they've all become worthless, and they figured everything had to be backed by gold. I'd like to do an exclusive program on this subject. It's just much too complex just to answer this way, but let me put it this way. Anyone should have the right to print money, but it makes sense. If we have to shed our conventional thinking, out the window right now, because let's assume for a second that you were a person, you had a company, and this company had a storehouse, and this storehouse, you didn't store people's excess possessions, but what you did store was gold and silver. And you gave everyone a certificate saying that in your case, Robert, you have 1,000 ounces or 100 ounces of gold deposited with my storage, my bank, if you will, my storage. And you can take that certificate and use it anywhere to exchange. Now, that's private money. But the private money is based on a standard, in this case, the gold standard or a silver standard. And there's always been arguments whether or not we should have ever had a silver as a standard as well as gold. And I think the answer is absolutely yes, we should. It gives us a lot more flexibility. But I don't want to, that's another discussion. Now, so in that case, you have gold being held privately and used as private currency. So the answer is yes, there's no problem with that, because what a person is doing in his own free domain is transferring title to a possession that this person has, and that's money, to someone else. Now, obviously, this piece of paper couldn't be written by Joe Blow. It has to be written by an establishment that everyone trusts. Right? Here's a word, trust, that you see bank and trust company today. You know, so you get away from the banking system as we know it. Let's do a program on that, you know, and I'm probably going to need my friend Andy Sutton to help me out on that one. I'll have him call in on that one, and then he can help me out, okay? Just a couple of quickies. Did you know now that Syria and Kuwait have abandoned the U.S. dollar? They're no longer pegging oil to the U.S. dollar. Another sign of people walking away from the U.S. dollar. Ladies and gentlemen, watch out. Here it comes. And talking about walking away from the U.S. dollar, here's something interesting. Phil from Oklahoma sent me this. Here it is. He says, here, it's a long email, but let me just give you the highlight. He says, annually, $1,300 billion of new money has been printed, and $54 billion worth of new gold was mined last year. Wow. So the United States is actually creating new money at the rate of 24 times as much as new gold. That's 1,300 over 54 equals 24. I guess the point there, folks, is that gold is probably expanding with the economies and worldwide population, but the generation of paper fiat currency is outstripping that exponentially, making it more worthless. Beware, who knows what's going to happen. I think that's the end of that, and that's the end of our email for today. And now on to our program on global warming. Thank you for your patience on that. This issue is one which is incredibly divisive and I think misunderstood. Now, the question is, do I understand it? Heck no, I don't understand it, and neither does anyone else. And let me explain that. We have the scientific community telling us, according to their computer models, that the world is becoming warmer. And it's becoming warmer as a result of, they believe, natural causes. It could be sunspot activity, it could be anything, but also people on Earth are creating large amounts of carbon dioxide. They're killing the ozone layer and all this other good stuff. And as a result, the Earth is warming up. Now, is the Earth, in fact, warming up because of carbon dioxide? Probably so. You know, is the main contributor carbon dioxide? Who knows? Now, let me say this about ecology and all this other stuff. I probably have a smaller footprint, like a carbon footprint, than most people. Not only most people, but people of my financial level in life, and where I am in life. I have my own company that I'm retired from. You know, I can do what I want. And I'll give you a couple of examples so you know where I'm coming from. You don't think I'm anti-environment and all this other good stuff. I recycle. I go through the pains of dividing all the stuff up and carrying it out and bringing it to recycle centers. And I recycle newspapers, magazines, plastics and glasses and all that stuff. All right. So I do that. It's a pain in the neck. I got all the boxes in the garage, but I've been doing that for years. All right. Secondly, I do not own a car. All right, my wife and I share one old car, and I make do. I know it sounds real crazy. I do have a little Vespa motor scooter. It's a PX150. It's a 4-speed. I even kickstart the little sucker, and I use that just to get around little local stuff. When my wife and I just returned from vacation, we decided that we would take a train ride, and we took the Amtrak system from Tulsa, Oklahoma, to San Antonio, Texas. We did not rent a car. All right. I am very modest in the way I use things up. If I can recycle, as I said, I will. So understand that my carbon footprint for someone of my financial status, you know, my station in life, is small. Right. And I do believe that one thing I do believe in, and that is that we have to manage this earth properly. All right? We should do everything that we can to not exasperate a situation which may be all too bad already, right? All right, so you know where I'm coming from. Now, as far as our global warming is concerned, there are two fractions. There's one fraction which tells us that, you know, things are getting terrible. It's man's got to do something about it. You know, we're doomed. And on the other side of the equation, we have people saying, no, it's a lot of malarkey. It's not going to happen. You know, we can't pollute enough to affect the earth, etc. All right. Where is the right answer? We don't know. The answer is no one knows, and computer models will never do it for us. They give us an indication and whatever, but they don't tell us why. For example, when Mount St. Helens erupted, there was enough particulates put into the atmosphere at that time, and this, I read this from in either Scientific America or National Geographic or something like that, that there was more pollutants put in the air by that one eruption in Mount St. Helens than mankind did since the beginning of time. I mean, that's how insignificant we are. But I do believe that, you know, we are contributing to this thing. I mean, obviously, if you look around, there are places that are being deforested, streams which are absolutely filthy, wildlife that no longer exists, etc., etc. So we're not doing a very good job, you know. We're probably doing a better job today, at least in America, than we have in the past. And now we're asking other countries that are way behind us economically to please be more concerned about the environment, which they're not doing a very good job of. All right, now, so where does this leave us? Well, we just don't know. We're stewards of this little planet called Earth, and we should be better about it, and we're not. We're not very good about it. We should be doing a lot better. All right. Now, I don't think anyone would argue with that, and no one would argue that. There's a, you know, we don't know for sure, but we're sure that at least we think that the carbon dioxide levels that we're emitting, you know, may be contributing somewhat or significantly to global warming. All right. Now, let me look at that. Let's take a look at that book, An Inconvenient Truth by Al Gore. I have not read that book. I've read, you know, excerpts from that book, and I'm really bothered by it because I don't like when a politician writes a scientific journal. I mean, it just doesn't smack right for me. Al Gore wrote a book from a political perspective. I have read where some comments that he makes are true, but don't tell the true story. For example, he talks about the ice melting in Alaska, Antarctica. But what he fails to mention is that the actual density of the ice and amount of ice in Antarctica is actually increasing. Now, if there's a scientist out there and I'm speaking out of turn, please write in and say, no, he's right, it's not increasing. There is too much of that. Global warming is going to occur with or without us. I think we've set things in motion, or we are in tandem with what is in motion, that's what's going to occur. The Earth is getting a little bit warmer. But that's really becoming now an economic issue more than a climatic issue. I say climatic or a human disaster issue. All of the governments are talking about reducing the amount of carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide, carbon emissions, you know, somewhat, and saying they'll level off in 10, 20, 30 years. Well, according to those people who believe this is getting, the Earth is getting warmer, 10, 20, 30 years is something we don't have. We don't have that luxury. But if you look at all the government publications, they're talking about not reducing it. I mean, from where we are now to drastically reducing it, they're talking about ameliorating it, the increase. So we're going to have this pollution coming out in greater volumes than we have today. It's just that the increase will be slowed somewhat. And this is what all the governments are talking about. Well, hell's bells. If it's unacceptable today, a little bit more next year is more unacceptable because we have less time. If that's unacceptable, then more slightly more the following year is still even more unacceptable. And the problem we have here is we have governments trying to solve a problem that they are ill-equipped to solve. Let me tell you this. What global warming will do is displace a lot of people from one place and put them in another, just like it always has. Parts of Africa one time were green, and now parts of Africa are parched. Parts of the United States in the South at one time, we used to have bananas in the United States. We no longer have bananas there. Actually, we may have bananas back again in the United States. In other words, things may change. It really is not a political issue, and it's not a survival issue. It's an economic issue. If it's going to be an and this means that people are going to be displaced. People will have to move. I mean, have to go where the food is, where the rain is, and all this other stuff. If you're talking about economic issues, the last organization that you would like involved in this is government, because government violates every law of economics, and you cannot have violations of a law of economics and have people survive. Everyone will be constrained. If we are concerned that global warming will hurt the individual, that the individual themselves will have less of a life, will be endangered, then putting government involved will guarantee that. Now, the only thing, the only mechanism which can assist us in ameliorating the situation is, in fact, a free world. Each economy being free to react as it wishes. Now, no business is going to say, if I continue to do this, I'm going to destroy myself and be out of business. No business is that stupid. Now, some people will try to get as much as they, every business will try to get as much as they can when they can, but eventually they're going to have to make decisions. For example, even today in the United States, there are decisions being made by companies to go what they call green, and they're doing this voluntarily. Why? Because it makes economic sense for them. If they're viewed by the consumer as the good guy, they feel that they can get more marketing mileage out of that than if they persist in doing what they're currently doing, you know, and then trying to make it look good. But even if the United States cleans up its act altogether, how in the world are we going to get the developing countries, China, India included, and then all the rest of them? There's 193 countries around the world. Most of them are developing countries. You know, to all of a sudden say, oh, no, we're going now to regress, right? Now, listen to when I say regress. I mean regress. If an economy starts to regress, who suffers by it? Not the government, because the government has the control, and they're the powerful people. They're the people with the money anyway. But the people, the lowest part of the economic ladder, are those people who will suffer. And we will suffer in the United States as well, even if we attempt to do something with global warming. If we attempt to do something, understand this. And as a result, our economic activity has got to be reduced. It's not going to increase. It's going to be reduced. That means our standard of living is reduced. So instead of taking a disaster or heading off a disaster, we're still going to have that disaster, but we're going to be in worse shape for it, and we're going to be not be able to maneuver fast enough to make those corrections to keep our economic activity going, so we don't guarantee that everyone loses their standard of living and then have global warming anyway. So I think that global warming, those people who are shouting global warming and that the governments have to do something, are really guaranteeing that all the nations around the world will suffer, because there will be less economic activity, less economic growth, less prosperity, and without prosperity, you have human suffering. That's guaranteed. We don't know what's going to happen with global warming. Now, again, I'm not suggesting at all that we start building coal-fired plants and just bellow smoke out like crazy. No, everything we should do should be very, very deliberate, and we should make certain that it has the least amount of contribution to global warming as we know it. And everyone should do their part. Every single person on the face of the earth should do their part. But I do believe that if government gets involved and violates the law of economics, you will be absolutely, absolutely guaranteed that there is human suffering, global warming, or no global warming. Boy, you know, we're out of time already, at least with Blog Talk Radio, we're out of time. So I'm going to close this out. I'm going to continue this, I think, on Sunday evening. We'll talk a little bit about that and get on some economic issues as well. Let me play our bumper song for a second. This is the end of today's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com, or phone in your questions while we're not broadcasting at 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away, or you are striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Until next time, stay well, stay tuned.